Hey, Kristen, how's it tracking?
With Carvana Value Tracker?
What else?
Oh, it's tracking. In fact, Value Surge Alert, trucks up 2.5%. Vans down 1.7%.
Just as predicted.
Mm-hmm.
So, we gonna...
I don't know. Could sell, could hold.
The power to always know our car's worth.
Exhilarating, isn't it?
Tracking.
Always know your car's worth with Carvana Value Tracker.
Welcome to Podvincible, a podcast about Invincible. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Invincible. Pete.
And we are going to be talking about episode 6 of season 3 of Invincible. All I can say is I'm sorry.
I accept that apology. Thank you.
Oh, you're much appreciated.
Pete locked and loaded with that. Man, he was ready. I love it.
If you haven't watched it on Prime Video, do go watch it there because we're going to spoil it starting right now. But lots of stuff going on in this episode. The biggest, most important thing, though, is that we meet a new character named Powerplex. He hates Invincible because during the fight in Chicago in season 1 between Omni-Man and Invincible, this dude's sister and niece were killed, so he swore vengeance on him. He powers up with the help of his wife, but by the end of the episode, he has ended up frying his wife and baby while fighting Invincible.
In an what is this program?
Hold on. We'll get to it. Still doesn't think he's to blame. He still blames Invincible, so there's more to come potentially from Powerplex. And then we get a huge tease in the mid-credits scene of what's coming next, which is Invincible War, one of the biggest storylines in the comic books. Again, there's a lot of other things that we're touching on here, including we get the end of Rexplode and Shrinking Ray's relationship. Monster Girl.
Maybe not.
Hold on. We'll get to that in a second. Monster Girl maybe gets cured, quote unquote, by Robot. And I'm sure I'm missing something there. Did Debbie and Paul do something I seem to remember? Probably. Oh, yeah. Oliver is practicing working with Invincible and Eve, and they have burgers on a roof. Was it a sex roof? We don't know. I guess we'll find
all
out.
All roofs are sex roofs.
That's right. We know
if
that.
You're doing it right, for sure.
Yeah.
And then there's other things as well.
Amber. Don't forget about Amber,
oh, right.
Bro.
Yes. I forgot about
the
bowling
game. She runs into
game.
His arms for an amazing hug. How dare you?
Except she is now dating Kyle.
Kyle, who's cool.
He's cool. They bond over a seance dog, which I know I've said this before, still bothers me. But it's not Science Dog. It's Sad's Dog. But whatever. I'll deal
There's
with
some
it.
Ownership issues there. Pete, I was thinking of you a lot because of the roller coaster ride you were clearly on. And it's amazing to me how hard you're white knuckling these failed relationships in this program. It's crazy. You're a believer in love, and that's not what's happening in this situation.
Why don't we, as we always do on this podcast, why don't we start off on Pete's relationship beat? How are you doing, Pete? How are you feeling?
Well,
was Justin right on the money here? Is this was this a rough app for you?
Wait, sorry. Is Pete's relationship beat where he talks about the highs and lows of his personal life, or is that
nope.
Are we talking about Invincible?
We're talking about Invincible because
yeah,
that's
his
what
magazine,
podcast is
the
about.
Magazine Pete's relationship beat that he publishes is mostly about Invincible, but there's always like a sidebar about his personal struggles, and it's really
check out my
so
zine.
I had so many pinups from Pete's relationship beat on my wall when I was in high school.
Enough stalling. Oh, let's get into it. Okay.
Every night before I went to sleep, I would kiss Pete on my wall. And I'd dream someday I'd be on a podcast with him and it's all working out.
What are the odds? What are the odds?
Speaking of dream relationships, Amber is supposedly happy for Mark here. And I think the hug says a lot. You know, the fact that she just kind of like runs into his arms for a very nice hug. And they talk. And also Amber's like, oh, I have a type. That was a fun moment as well. I think it was great to see them together. It was also the fun reveal of like, oh, hey, Amber's here. And it was like, oh, shit, what's Mark going to do? How's he going to handle this? And she was like, so Eve, huh? Yeah, I could have called that. I mean, that was all in the subtext, I think. You know, it was animation,
that's,
but it was
that's text.
That was text. That was definitely
text. I felt like it came across.
Yeah, when they're saying it out loud, it's not subtext.
Well,
it's
she didn't say what I said out loud, but she, you know, implied that she was like.
She didn't imply it. She said it out loud.
She said it out loud. There's like, very little subtext going on in this scene. I think
there's a lot of layers to it, but it is great to see them together. I mean, they light up whenever they're around each other. So
I think overall, just talking about this relationship stuff, it's really nice to see these are characters that are like, I'm going to guess, mid-40s. They've been through a couple of marriages and divorces. So they're like very cool about everything.
They are bowling, which is a mid-40s sport.
So, it's just nice to see mature adults dealing with things in a mature way versus what you might expect from teenagers, I want to say, on a television program. But I don't know. Who's to say?
Yeah. Well, hey, who knows how old the writers are? My point being that this relationship is great, and it's nice that the show knows that we should be revisiting this every once in a while. So it's great to see. But the Rex and Ray stuff was very interesting.
Before we jump off of this, all sarcasm aside, I want to see more drama here. I want to see more tension. Everybody's being so reasonable, and it's driving me insane.
And I would extend that not just about this part of this episode, but this whole episode was melodramatic without being dramatic. Like, it was a ton of scenes of people being like, oh, that is interesting, and then, like, sort of just going about their business. Mm-hmm. Like, not to back out fully on the whole episode, one of the most dramatic moments was Paul being stressed in the flying car. And that's a bad sign for your Invincible television program.
It was very funny.
That was cool. But I was like, why is this the most interesting thing that's happening? Setting aside the absolute jet black bleakness of the main plot of this storyline, there was both like casual and then horrifying over the course of it. It didn't leave me feeling catharsis or affected by it. It left me feeling like sort of ambushed at the end and sort of like a little lost in the like Powerplex family melodrama that we were getting into here. I was like, I was in the middle. I was like, what are we doing? And they're like, oh, just killing these people? Setting up their deaths? It felt like I felt a little bit rug pull here. And then the end, the post-credit scene that you teased, Alex, we've seen most of this scene already. Do this once,
but
not twice.
Reveal. I want to go on record. The mustache mark is my favorite.
Of course. There was a close-up on the stash.
We'll definitely talk about that and what that means towards the end of the episode. Let's sort of like put that on the back burner for the moment because there are a lot of other things to talk about. Justin, I hear what you're saying. I mean, I think what they're doing here is what we've been talking about all season long. Is it's basically trying to push Mark into situations where he is going to kill somebody. And here, I actually did think it was kind of interesting, the thread of him dealing with the guilt of what happened in Chicago. But like you're saying, it turns out in the grimmest, darkest way possible. And I'm not sure what it says about Mark, because ultimately he's like, basically at the level of, this is a real bummer. I'm really bummed about Chicago. Oh, man, that's a real bummer that this guy killed his wife and baby and fried them, and I saw their fried corpses. I'm really bummed out about it. It doesn't seem to be pushing him anywhere because, yes, he's challenged to be like, do I kill this guy to take him down? And his answer, I think, laudably is like, nope, I'm not going to fight you, man. I'm not going to fight you. And then he sees what happens when you power up and you go too far with Powerplex. That's what they're showing here. And with the next storyline, obviously, like, he's going to get a very physical one-to-one showing of that. But other than kind of knowing where we're going in the comic book, it's unclear to me how this ties into Mark's journey because he's so even this episode.
Well, I would argue that I think this was interesting because he talks a lot about like Cecil protecting him from this kind of stuff and then him kind of struggling with, oh, actually, I should know the ramifications of my actions. And there's this also interesting thing going on with Oliver where Oliver's like, I want to do this. And he's like, you're not ready, man. And I think that this is an example of what Oliver's not ready for is that when you mess up, a shit ton of people die. And they might be upset about that. But I also think it's interesting that instead of it being this thing where Mark's like, okay with it or whatever. I like to see him struggling and sad and just kind of staring at the names. I think that that is very powerful and interesting to make this character go through, especially with all of that is coming and happened to him. Also, the whole kind of like, when are you good and bad? That Oliver is kind of be like, will everyone hate my dad forever? Like, he's two people. So it's an interesting thing that they're kind of grappling with. And I'm glad it's not all just wrapped up and he knows, like, oh, yeah, it's sad, but I got to keep doing things and try not to kill people. I don't know. We sat in it in this episode, and I kind of appreciated it.
Well, the only thing that, because I like the theme of this season, I just feel like they're making Mark wrong a lot, or just like ignorant or not aware of what's happening, where I feel like everyone around him is like, hey, man, you need to chill about that, or you need to deal with that. Or like when he goes to Powerplex at the end, he's like, hey, I just want to tell you, I did know their names. And Powerplex is like, what? That's not the point, you idiot. And I was like, I'm with Powerplex here. That was
that's the thing. You're rolling with Powerplex a lot of it.
Well, not a ton for me, but like that moment, I was like, why am I feeling more sympathy to the viewpoint of the villain here who just did horrible things for a reason, for his own personal reasons? And it, like, that's just a strange place this far into the season.
Well, it makes me wonder, is the show trying to get us, the viewer, around to the idea that it is okay for Invincible to kill? Because he could have saved the wife and baby if he killed Powerplex, if he fought Powerplex. The decision that he ultimately made wrong, like Powerplex is in the wrong, mind you, but the decision Mark made incorrectly was not immediately removing Powerplex from that situation. And he could have done that with his strength immediately, like stop the whole thing.
So you're saying that maybe this season of Invincible is pro-violence?
Maybe.
I think it does feel that way.
Yeah. I think you guys are missing what the real message of the season is make sure you have a sturdy roof for all the fucking you need to do on it. And this is big roof. I don't know how you guys don't see that. It is clear as day. I mean, every episode we got to have the roof action. You know what I mean?
And a softness to it, I would argue. Because sturdiness is important, but also something that's not going to, really.
Well, you bring a blanket up there, bro. You know what I mean? You don't want a soft roof.
Save a step, man. Instead of the shingles, make your roof out of a mattress. Or better yet, and I learned this from a pig one time, straw.
I don't know, man. I'm pretty sure the less of that is not straw. Okay, I believe the less of it is brick.
Oh, what were you saying?
No,
I'm sorry.
Alex does a sort of a reverse Three Little Pigs where it's not about safety from the wolf. It's about which house you want to fuck on. And it goes brick, stick, straw. Straw
wins.
You may
be built like a brick shit house, but I want to fuck her on the straw roof. You know what I'm talking about?
Wow. Man,
I wish I did.
Do we do pull quotes for the episode? Because that's a good one.
I did want to get back to the Rex and Ray, not to jump all over the place.
You're literally jumping off. Well, let me just say one more thing before we move off this much larger theme than Rex and Ray's half relationship.
What's more important to you to talk about today?
Certainly. Certainly. You talked about how all the characters are sort of maturing through the drama, out maturing the drama here. It's also strange that the Invincible and the other people around him are so mature with their interpersonal relationships, some of the Oliver stuff, yet the dealing with Debbie and Paul, yet a wildly immature dealing with this moral black and white situation that has spread throughout the season. And it feels like that should be reversed to me. Mm-hmm. Like he should be a little bit struggling more with all the interpersonal stuff, especially with so much going on, and very much aware of like, okay, I see the situations I'm in there and be challenged by them more rather than just being like, yeah, I didn't end up killing him. So he killed his family.
Well, and also not to keep putting off the Ray and Rex thing, but to stay on Powerplex, I also thought the scenes in the GDA, because he ends up first trying to prosecute Invincible and that doesn't work, and then he gets a job at the GDA. All of the stuff there I thought was interesting in terms of like, yeah, this is how this world would work. They just sort of casually chat about, oh, yeah, Invincible, is he stronger than Anissa? I don't know. What about 2A, which was Oliver? At least he's there. And like kind of talking about them the way that fans talk about them.
Yeah.
Because that's their job versus every time they cut to Powerplex, he's like, what are we talking about? Hundreds, thousands of people die every time these people fight. So that contrast there I thought was interesting, and I would have loved to see that play with more. Not to backseat Wright or anything, but I wonder if there's a version of the episode that cuts out absolutely everything except the Powerplex stuff. And maybe that's stronger, like 100% from his perspective.
Well, and I do think that story is pretty well told. Like, yeah. Especially, like, I did like Powerplex, his arc. It was very tragic, especially starting with that, but really well done. I thought it was very widescreen horrifying what they did. It felt like a blockbuster movie being seen in the theater. And then Powerplex's power-ups, where we saw the discs and the veins and all that. That stuff was really cool and well done.
It's like, get the hammer.
Yeah, and all of that just – and then, yeah, him testing his powers, very cool. And especially, like, setting him up – that was, like, a hero's origin type story, but he's the villain. And then he's – I don't know if we're going to see him again soon. It felt like he was about this story and the tragedy of it. Mm-hmm. They really took their time in setting him up in a well-done way. So I would have liked maybe more of a twist on that. Like, he was being set up as a hero, and then he's like – and my job is kill Invincible or whatever. But they preloaded it with tragedy, so it was, we couldn't do that.
Two quick things that I want to mention about this. One, for anybody that doesn't know, though you probably could have recognized this, Powerplex is voiced by Aaron Paul.
Aaron Paul.
Very cool. But in a weird bit of casting, his wife is voiced by Kate Mara, and they played husband and wife on one episode of Black Mirror, which I assume was the reason they ended up with that. A lot of people... Nice. Thought the character model for the wife was based on Kristen Ritter, and Kristen Ritter and Aaron Paul were in a relationship on Breaking Bad, but that's how the character looks in the comics, so that's not what it is, and it's not Kristen Ritter. The other thing, just to kind of like throw out to you guys, that this thought just kind of came up while you were talking, Justin, we get this whole focus on Powerplex, and also we got focus on Double Tape Guy and his boyfriend, Bubble Tape Guy and his
Bubble
boyfriend.
Tape, yeah.
A couple of episodes back. What do you think is going on there? Because they're clearly spending a lot of time with these villains and fleshing them out and giving them more, almost more of a background life, like we're saying, than the main characters of the show.
Well, I think they're flipping the superhero villain model this season to highlight that they're people and that they're not just like flashy threats to our main character. And that's cool. I like that idea. The only issue I have with is they're doing it in a very melodramatic way that I would rather have it be, you know, a little more realistic, I guess, or a little more like it's so emotionally, it's like driven, like treacly in the way that's either happy and then sad or tragic and then like determined. Like I want it to be a little, just a little more nuanced because I really like the idea and I like a lot of the choices. It just feels a little like, you know, you can hear the violin music.
Well, I also think that, yeah, I mean, especially, yeah, there was a lot of moments where you're like, oh, God. But I do think that the him, we're getting the more times with the villain is also related to the fact that we're away from Cecil and all that kind of stuff. So it's a little bit more of the every person kind of point of view and tale and how it affects everybody, which I think is interesting. And yeah, I mean, something that you don't get in comics or other things where you're not riding with people who may or may not matter as much, you know? So it's interesting.
It's also interesting that they're spending so much time on these villains and giving them such a backstory, humanizing them, when what we're setting up for the end of the season is the most comic booky, like, mwahaha villain plot of them all. Like, a messed up villain returning with an army of clones, essentially, of Invincible. It's like, oh, not a lot of nuance there.
Yeah.
I am, and I'm sure we'll be talking more about this over the next couple of weeks, but I am really curious, like I was towards the beginning of the season, of like, what is the overall arc of this season? And starting with, like we're talking about here, Cecil, and ending with Angstrom, Levy, and an army of Invincibles, I don't know yet how they connect. You know, I hope they connect it in some way. I hope we do get an arc there, but right now it feels like we started with one thing and we're ending with another.
Yeah. And I guess that also covers the Rex and Ray stuff. So let's move on and talk about it. I think we got it. We started there and then we...
Well, we haven't really talked about it. So
I mean, you mentioned it a bunch of times. So I've heard those
names a lot.
Also, speaking of interesting things that this show does, is we see Ray watching evil robot boy doing evil things before we realize that they're going to be evil, and kind of this connection between people. And I thought, like, Ray's going to see that and run into Rex's arms because it's like, oh, I got to kind of witness something nice and lovely. I'm going to go kind of spend some time with Rex. But that moment changes her and is like, if they can kind of like happiness, what is my happiness? Not waiting to die again or go up against someone who's more overpowered than me. I want to get a life and start a new life. And so I thought that was an interesting way of showing us and not telling us in a kind of unique way. But man, you got to give it to Rex Blode. I mean, he is a over-the-top douchebag, but his kind of thing of like, this is who I am, this is what I'm about, was very nice and moving. And I'm hoping over the episodes, maybe he realizes what he's giving up by kind of letting Ray go, and maybe he chases that down later. But man,
that again is my kind of big question here, is we already know that Rex is growing up and getting better, so maybe this is just part of his journey. But it was weird to me to be like, great news, everybody, Shrinking Ray is back. She's alive. She's back on the team. Isn't this a big deal? Here she is. She's really into grocery shopping. She has a midnight dinner.
She wants to make dinner, man. She's not into grocery shopping. She just wants to make dinner for herself.
I guess my point is that maybe it's a part of the journey of Rex growing up, and maybe that's what we're getting here. But I think we were already getting that through every other iteration of the plot. So I'm not sure what bringing Ray back for these couple of episodes just to have her exit did here, you know, what it added.
I feel like we need one more beat of this story, because otherwise I was like, this was like a trip to the grocery store, essentially, is what this this season-long Rex-Ray plot was like. What should we have for dinner? Sorry, it's going to be a little late. Like, that's the vibe. And, like, I live that.
How dare you?
I live of my life, living out loud.
Down to just that. I think there's a lot more happening there with both of them. And it's nice to see somebody go, hey, this isn't what I want to do. I'm going to try something else.
Yeah, like, would you like Cholula or another hot sauce?
Well, I would maybe have to go to the grocery store and stare at those options for a while.
Maybe sriracha. Know? Maybe you want some sriracha or Tapatio, you know? That's the kind of stuff I'd love to see. Or Texas Pete. That's what
I
call you.
Do you buy that because your name's on it?
No.
Oh.
I buy Montana Justin.
Ah, yeah, sweet.
Yeah.
I buy Mild Alex. Okay, take it spicy. We got to learn that his name is Rex Sloan.
Yeah.
Cool. Similar.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. See, you can see how he got from Sloan to Splode. You know what I mean?
100%. I need one more beat here. Like, since we're heading into this Invincible War thing, it feels like Ray will come back for, like, one last mission, and that's where we'll get a closer on this storyline.
She'll die
horribly.
Again?
Yeah.
Something like that? I don't know. I guess we'll see what happens. What else? There was something else we should probably talk about.
Well, Paul is? Can we talk about how great Paul is?
Cliff Curtis, man. Love Cliff Curtis.
Oh, the amount of Paul in this episode is, again, shocking. I don't know. I don't know what we're doing with this story.
Not to cross the streams here, but Pete, there's a character named Paul who is currently dating Mary Jane in the Spider-Man comics. And everybody's like, what are you doing here? You're a normal guy. Get out of here. Leave us alone. Do you like this Paul, who is a normal guy, better than the Paul in Amazing Spider-Man? Or how do you rank your Pauls? And Aaron Paul in there, please.
I don't rank my Pauls. But I do think that this Paul is interesting and a very kind of – I like what he's – struggling with. It was funny to see him after the meal be like, why did I say that? That was so dumb. I liked the human moments in this episode. I thought, you know, when Power Surge or whatever the F his name is. Aaron Paul there, like his speech got me choked up. Like I was like, oh my God, this guy is going through a lot. and is making all the wrong moves. But
so you like Paul so much that you would rather talk about Powerplex here in this moment?
No, I was just talking about the Pauls that he mentioned. But I do think that the
Paul.
The Paul being scared out of his mind in the car was a very relatable Paul. And that was it was fun to spend this time with him. I don't know what's going to happen to Paul. Probably die horribly. But I'm still having a blast with this Paul. And it's nice to see that it's not just going to cut to, oh, yeah, Mom and Paul are great. No need to spend time on it. Like, no, what's going on with them?
If your hot sauce Alex is mild Alex, I feel like Paul's is just like regular oatmeal. He's so like
it's not just, hot sauce.
Bingo. Now you get my point. I think he's just so like milquetoast. I'm not sure. Makes sense.
What do you mean milquetoast? He makes a mean spaghetti, bro. Come on.
Yeah, that's the most normcore thing to make and be good at. It's like you make a good spaghetti. That's literally two things.
That drives me a little crazy.
This is the way Paul makes it.
This is a general TV thing, but almost every TV show and every movie as well, there are one of two things people make. If they say they're a good cook, they're making spaghetti with spaghetti sauce, and they have somebody try the sauce, and they're like, oh my God, that's amazing. What do you put in that? Like, I don't know, salt and pepper or whatever. And then the other thing, if they're cooking something for somebody, it's always
takes all day to make good sauce, bro.
It's always eggs in the morning, every single time. Like, there's nothing else that anybody makes in TV or movies other than an egg of some sort, usually that they burned so you know that they're busy. Or spaghetti sauce, so you know they're a good cook.
What the f are you talking about, dude? That is so untrue. It's a ridiculous statement. There are so many movies
Name
and TV
one
shows.
One exception.
Seinfeld spent so much time talking about cereal, it was ridiculous.
He made
That's
that.
He's immature.
Seinfeld was busy in the cereal factory making the cereal, Pete.
There was.
I mean, that dude loves breakfast. That's just he did a Pop-Tarts movie.
That's just so not true.
That was bad.
That movie was very bad. Yeah. I would have rather had eggs. Mm-hmm. And so Alex is proposing that every character is like, hey, morning, would you like your crepe Suzette?
Or something. Come on, man.
I will say breakfast foods are limited. There's a limited palate. I make breakfast for my ridiculous. Kids every day. And, you know, I'm on like a 4-option rotation.
Yeah.
You got
I will
waffles,
say I usually
and
make
cereal oatmeal.
Yeah. I make the other option, which is the what other thing you see ribs? On TV, which is like huge stack of pancakes, huge stack of bacon, tons and tons of fruit. But my kids are so busy every morning, they're like, I'm sorry, and just grab a strawberry and leave.
Wow.
Yeah.
That got real
weird
fast.
You gotta sleep in, dude.
You gotta the other like, thing that happens on TV.
You gotta do
which
it
is
like
less
Uncle
about the
Buck. Make giant pancakes. You know what I mean? Come on.
Yeah, that's the only other option are slightly burnt eggs and Uncle Buck pancakes.
Well, that's been our breakfast corner. Why don't we talk about the post-credit scene because there's a lot of stuff to get into there. And I think we should skirt spoilers because obviously they're going to be doing probably a lot of this coming in the next two episodes. But Angstrom Levy is officially back. He has an army of invincibles from throughout the multiverse. And as we mentioned earlier, it heads into a big storyline that lasted, I want to say, 5 issues of the comics called Invincible War. The way that it worked in the comics is Image Comics has this very loose superhero universe for anybody who doesn't know. It's basically like they could bring other characters in, but they're not actually connected. Savage Dragon, Spawn, etc. They're kind of doing their own thing. They never really make reference to the other thing. But all of them are in there, all of the Image characters. Witchblade is in there. Tech Jacket, who is a Robert Kirkman character, is pretty big in this as well. I don't think we're going to see most of that. Maybe Tech Jacket, if they have the rights there. But I think, if anything, they'll have like they had with the Spider-Man crossover last season, they'll have analogs for this thing. So we might see somebody who kind of looks like Savage Dragon or Spawn, but it won't be them.
But who's that for? Is that just for the fan, the comic book fans?
Yes.
I feel like they won't do that, but maybe.
Yeah. But the one thing that I will say without getting too ahead of our skis here in terms of what happens next is that the two...
It's Seance Dog.
Oh, yay! Hey! I prefer Seance Dog.
Yeah, don't ruin it.
The two Invincibles you want to keep your eye on here if things do pan out the way that they do in the comics. The one right in the center wearing the golden costume is called Sinister Mark or Sinister Invincible. He's kind of the leader of the team, and he's definitely the worst one of them all. So he's going to be probably a big deal. And the other one that you want to keep an eye on is the one with the mohawk, because again, if things pan out the way they do in the comics, he's a big deal, not just for the Invincible War storyline, but going forward for probably most of next season, leading into the next big twist for Invincible, which we definitely won't spoil here, but no. He is sort of crucial to that plot line.
I almost feel like it's more fun if they switch it up for the show. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be the gold one, and it's not, you know?
Yeah, we'll see. They could do it anyway. It could be the mustache one. They had like three Viltrumite marks in there, one with a mustache, one without a mustache, and one who is horribly scarred, who I believe was inspired by Anakin Skywalker from Revenge of the Sith, if I remember correctly.
Well, there's the loose mask one that's a reference to the DC...
Grifter?
Yeah, Grifter, yeah.
Yeah, looks like a dumb piece of shit.
What the
dude, I will say, mask. I from a mask management point of view,
flappy loose mask. You don't like it?
No, I don't.
You could wear a loose mask that can just blow up at any time, revealing all the things you want to hide.
You could Marilyn Monroe that shit at any moment, and your identity's ruined.
Yeah, he can't stand over any subway vents because he's fucked. The other one that really bothered me, which I don't think was in the comics, but when I was looking at the Invincibles at the end, there's one of them that like almost has the head sock, like the Gambit head sock design thing, but his forehead is open. So it's just like a head sock on the side and his hair sticking up. Looks real weird. Don't like that.
Yeah. Sort of 90s adjacent.
Yeah, that's right. Some fun one.
But again, like, I think theme-wise, we can talk about, it seems pretty clear what's going to happen here. If you have 15 Marks who are ready and willing to kill, that certainly puts Mark in a position where he needs to kill them or be killed, and it is literally himself. So I understand how that brings the season theme, maybe not to a close, but like to a head, certainly.
Sort of. Yeah. But to me, that's like he killed Multipaul indiscriminately. So if that falls into like, yeah, he can kill another these other great marks. Paul. Another great Paul. He can kill the Invincibles, no problem. Maybe it'll come down to killing Angstrom Levy, but like...
Sure, but we already did that.
Yeah.
So maybe it's like him making the decision to not kill Angstrom Levy this time?
But yeah, I don't know. I think that'll
That's
be
what I'm
the...
saying. It feels weirdly something like we've been here before with nothing different. Like Mark seems exactly the same. Mm-hmm. Maybe it will be revealed that he has changed given all everything that we've seen him sort of go through in this, or at least we've seen the narrative. We haven't seen his emotional side or his thought process change. Maybe it has, and we're just going to see it here, but it does feel like, oh, a lot of this stuff feels fairly predictable.
Yeah. The other thing that, I don't know, clearly, like, we like a lot about this season, and I'm personally still enjoying the show.
I'm having a great time.
Myself, even though I feel like plot-wise it's wobbly and I'm having a hard time holding on.
How dare
I think
you.
A lot How of it you. Has to do with Nolan mostly being off-screen, because that has so much to do with Oliver and Mark and gives this focus of this triumvirate of these three characters. It's not complete without him in the mix, and I understand why he's not here, but we had him. It was so great when he came back mid-season during season two. It just elevated the show because that's the central relationship there between Mark and Nolan. Now we have Mark Oliver and Nolan, and we just need to bring him back. And I don't think that's going to happen in the last two episodes, maybe at the end. But
maybe at the end, because the other thing is, the only reason I can see the Debbie Paul stuff being in this is that Nolan's going to come back.
Oh, yeah. And it's going to be like, who is this really cool average dude who makes unbelievable biscotti?
Yeah. That is what Nolan will say. Yeah. Who makes this good spaghetti?
Do you think he's going to like
pick She's
going to
be like,
his hands?
I would go back with you, but the spaghetti's so good. I'm not gonna.
They're gonna probably put him in a high chair, and he'll be like picking up the biscotti with his hands and throwing it all over the place. And they'll be like, Nolan,
jeez, I'm making a mess. This is the worst thing you've
ever
done.
I do think though that I'm wondering, you know, as someone who divorcing myself from the comic books, I think that it would be really cool if
Pete's relationship be divorced from the comics.
If Nolan got there with Alan just in time for this big showdown, because Mark's going to need people. You know, it's only one versus 15 of him. And also, it's weird that, you know, Brainiac was like, no, no, 14 is not the right number. He's only one guy. I got to make 15 of these dudes before I'm ready to roll.
Well, just to make – I think the solution is just tempting these other marks with Invincible's greatest weakness, a little piece of roof.
Oh, dude, they're all going to be fucking on roofs. If you don't got a good roof and all those marks are in town, you're in trouble.
Well, that's why it was so funny to me the end of the episode when Mark's on the roof and Eve's like – hey, I've been looking all over for you. I was like, looking all over? He's clearly on the roof.
Where you guys hang out all the time. It would probably be the first place you should look. Yeah.
Any other moments from the episode before we start to wrap up here?
Yes. Hat, sash, or belt. Yep. You make the call. You're getting a special power up.
Well, you guys are pro hat, but I would go belt all day, man.
You don't want a sash? It's so like...
You can't always be sashing it, bro.
I feel like a beauty queen if you're wearing a sash, or the mayor, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. You can have different titles on it. It's like a mood. It can be like happy, or Pete, like aggravated.
That little robot boy knew that the belt was the move, man.
The idea that he ever was thinking about hat or sash is insane. Yes.
I will throw out there, just based on what we're talking about in terms of relationships, this scene I thought was great. And the reason I thought it was great was it moved the relationship of these characters forward through the lens of it being a superhero show. It moved the plot forward, but also it brought them closer together in a way that has slowly been progressed here, which we don't really get from the Rex and Ray thing. We mostly are not getting from Mark and Eve or Amber or anything like that. So more of that. Less of the others.
Well, that's why it was especially crazy to me that Ray was watching that interesting scene play out and was like, huh. And she was like, hey, what should we have for, should we get nachos? Or whatever her scene is about. Where it's like, oh, you took the wrong lessons there, Ray.
No, she took the right lesson. That was my point. Were you even listening when I was talking?
Yeah, you said Rex and Ray, and I was Jesus.
Also, it was great to see William back.
Then I heard Paschetti.
William back, kicking butt at bowling, throwing down turkeys. That's impressive, man.
That was a fun bit, that William is better at bowling than everybody else. That was good. I like that.
A couple other things I would say. Donald helping Invincible, interesting.
I feel like is the Invincible moment of the episode.
Mm. Well, wait a second for that. Elephant Man, just really pushing that vegetarian lifestyle.
John DiMaggio, Jake the Dog from Adventure Time, Bender from Futurama.
One of my faves. Wild to use him on such a small part.
Mm-hmm. But it was a funny part.
The Powerplex.
Realizing he's just a training module was very funny.
Powerplex, big speech at the top with the title card stuff, I thought was
funny. That was hilarious.
And I would say, we talked about Aaron Paul. I thought his voice work was actually really good. He changed his voice quite a bit for this role, which was cool.
I mean, it was still recognizable, but yeah, he definitely changed it. Also, Sonic the Hedgehog showing up, that was funny as well.
I did, plot-wise, I like the build there, that Shapesmith came in, beat Powerplex, Eve came in, beat Powerplex, and finally on that third beat, we get Invincible coming in. So I thought that was a nice progression of that story, even if I had maybe some issues with it in terms of emotionally how it played out.
Right.
There was some real funny lines with that. Like, you know, he came in on a fun beat and, you know, then everybody thought he was dead. And then he just said his name. I mean, it's fun stuff.
Yeah. Good times. Why don't we wrap up here by talking about the Invincible moment of the episode? Pete, you already called yours out. So go ahead.
Yeah. I just think that the fact that Donald and Mark can have a relationship, I think is important and going to be really huge moving forward, especially if he's going to have a bunch of evils to battle. So I think their relationship starting to mend, even though Cecil isn't a part of it, is super interesting and is going to be huge later on.
And I sort of highlighted this a couple minutes ago as well, but I do think the amount of emphasis given to Paul in this episode makes me feel like we are going to get Nolan back, and that's going to be a big factor. This season, while we talked about the moral sort of confusion that Mark is having or situation, it also is a bit of just a hangover from what Nolan did. That's the moral complicator here. And so Nolan, it is like a Sins of the Father season, especially in this episode. So I do think that clue that Nolan will be coming back is going to be huge for the wrap-up of the season, whether he makes it back for the final episode and the Invincible War, or if that's what we're going to out of this season.
Yeah. And I'll just throw out the post-credit scene. I think, you know, that's the last two episodes of the season for sure. That's
You're going not going to say Paul? You're not going to say the Paul Carr scene?
No, I'm not also going to say the Paul Carr scene.
You're saying the Invincible moment of the episode for you was all the Invincibles? That moment when they show up?
Well, that gives us exactly what the plot is going to go for. Yeah, Invincible moment was the title card.
He's wearing an Invincible hat for a reason.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Alex, you just cooked spaghetti for dinner. We blew our minds with that answer. Because that was the most spaghetti answer I could imagine.
Yeah. If you'd like to support the show and all the shows we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub for ad-free versions of this podcast, Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, number two, Paul McCartney, number one, Paul the Apostle.
Wow. Wow.
Leaving a lot of balls there,
my
bro.
Guy. There's a lot. Spicy Alex.